Welcome to another PI World podcast. This is an audio-only version offered as another way to enjoy our great content. A full video version can be seen on piworld.co.uk, where you can find many more videos of interest to investors.
Good afternoon. Thank you very much for joining. I'll quickly introduce myself, and Tom could introduce himself, but I joined Brand Architects at the beginning of May last year, so the height of lockdown one. My background is very much within the sort of health and beauty industry. So I cut my teeth at Revlon in the 90s, where I had a number of executive roles heading up marketing. After that, I had a quick sojourn at Swatch, which is my only exposure outside the beauty industry, whereas brand director for 3 years. And then I had a number of roles. I had my own business, but I also worked for a company called KMI. And that's where I came across the Fish brand, which obviously Brand Architects now owns. And then prior to Brand Architects, for 10 years, I was managing director of Yardley of London, which is owned by Wipro Consumer Care.
Good afternoon, everyone. So I'm Tom Carter. I joined as Chief Financial Officer in June of last year. So my background, trained as a chartered accountant with PwC. And then since then, I've done a number of finance or hybrid finance and operations role within commerce and industry, predominantly. Of most interest to Brand Architects has certainly been my time at Procter & Gamble and also at Alliance Boots. Latterly, I was with a mid-market, part private equity-backed technology company. So different products to Brand Architects, but a very similar business model, which leads in nicely to my role now at Brand Architects.
Thanks, Tom. Just a little bit of background for those that you are not familiar with Brand Architects. We're a carve-out of a company called Swallowfield. So Swallowfield was predominantly a contract manufacturing business based down in Somerset, which is listed on the AIM. They started a brand acquisition project in 2015, which went through until 2018. And during that time, they bought Fish as a brand, they bought The Real Shave Company, and they bought Brand Architects. And Brand Architects had about 8 or 9 brands within its portfolio. And Swallowfield also created a number of other brands. So in 2019, a company called KDC1, which is a Canadian-based contract manufacturer, approached the board with an offer to buy the contract manufacturing side. And the board made that decision to sell, which basically left Brand Architects, which is a branded-only business. And what we've been doing is sort of repositioning that as a British challenger brand business. We like to believe that we're insight-led, a combination of understanding the consumer and customer data, as well as our own gut instinct. We use a outsourced model, so we use third-party contract manufacturing. But it's very important to stress that not only is it ethical, but we also look at the sustainability of our sourcing. The big change from how Brand Architects used to be managed was it is a retailer exclusive led business. So brands on the right hand side top are the female brands. So brands like Argan, Sensebar, Kind Natured, Happy Natural, Dirty Works, all of those were retailer exclusive, which basically meant that they were reliant on consumers finding them in store rather than going to stores. So our change now is to try and make those brands omnichannel. So they've got a footprint not only within bricks and mortar, but also e-tail and D2C. But in order to make that transition, we need to invest and create noise and buzz around those brands. What I'll take you through now is an overview of the year we've had. So as you're all aware, the trading conditions have been very difficult for the first 6 months. It has been a mixed bag. So the issues on the high street, in particular the likes of Boots and Superdrug, also stores like TK Maxx, they were either closed or they had a significant reduction in footfall. That had an impact on some of our business. Also, some of the working from home has had an impact on categories like men's hair styling because they're not going out as much. Conversely, though, we've had some good uptick in terms of super facialists. People want not being able to go and have a facial, so they've been doing facials at home. But also we've seen strong growth in the grocers and also a big increase in our D2C and e-com business. There have been pressures towards the end of the 6 months because of Brexit. So there's paperwork stresses, which we've managed to get through. One unforeseen area was the shortage of containers, which did put pressure on our business, but we managed to get through that. and we've negotiated a much stronger position for the second half. So notwithstanding that sort of difficult trading condition, a number of key initiatives are in place. So the first one is, we're delighted actually to announce we've agreed a 5-year contract with global e-com platform provider who will be working with us in creating a marketplace for all our brands. At the moment, our brands have individual websites, so they're like silos. So there's very little ability to cross-sell. You can't share digital assets. So our intention is to bring everything into one place. And that will soft launch in July 21 with a hard launch by September. The second key area is Superfaces, which I intimated earlier. So that's shown strong growth. It's up 50% from a gross sales perspective and over those 6 months. And so we've now put in place our first ever advertising campaign, which will run from May 21 through to March 22. And that should be transformational in terms of the size and scale of the brand. The third area is that we're in a program of relaunching a number of our underperforming brands. So during May and June and into July, depending on retailers' range cycles, we'll be relaunching Happy Naturals, Kind Natured, Sensibar, Argan and Root Perfect. And to support those relaunches, we'll be putting in place well-developed and robust PR marketing programs from April onwards. We're also pleased to say that for all of the NPD, as a minimum, 30% of it will be PCR, which is post-consumer recycled plastic, with the objective that it's 50% and higher going forward. All of our card is FSC certified, which is Forest Stewardship Council. So that means that it has to come from a renewable, sustainable forest. And then the other area is that 98% of all our products are 100% recyclable. So that's a start. It's a long way to go, but it's a good move forward for the business. And the final area is that we've improved our net cash position by 1 million up to 19 million.
So these are the financial highlights for the period. So I'll go around the clock face, starting with net sales. So in the half, the business delivered net sales of 9 million, which on an adjusted comparative basis was down 1 million versus 10 million in the prior year. We'll talk in the next slide about the main changes or how to bridge from the 10 to the 9. But we certainly do believe it's a credible result, given obviously the headwinds that the business has faced during the period versus the prior year, in particular with the restrictions on the high street and in retail and generally, which has obviously impacted our business. But nonetheless, the business achieved 9 million net sales. From a gross profit margin percentage point of view, so this is gross profit in relation to net sales, the business was able to increase it by 1% or 100 basis points versus the prior year. So going from 38 to 39%. This is partly driven by good growth, in particular on Superfacialist, which is skincare is always going to be margin additive to the group. And also a shift in terms of the channel or where consumers buy, moving partly onto e-tail and D2C, which we were partly able to capture as well, is also good for gross profit margin percentage. So a good move in the right direction from that point of view. Underlying operating profit. So this is effectively operating profit with some add backs to be able to look at what's the true underlying performance of the business. That delivered 0.8 million in the period versus 1.2 million. So as I said, this adds back things like amortization and finance costs, which are obviously costs to the business, which clearly flows through to profit before tax. But it's another way of looking at that operating profit of the business. That was down 0.4 versus the prior year, so 1.2 being the result in the prior year interims. The main driver of that, of course, was the impact of the lost sales and therefore the margin that goes through to the bottom line. But we were able to partially offset that through some cost savings, in particular within warehouse costs. The good thing was being able to reduce our inventory, which then meant that our storage costs in our warehouse could reduce accordingly. So 0.8 million was the delivery in the period. From a profit before tax perspective, however, group was up 0.1 versus the prior year. So the non-recurring nature of certain exceptionals costs that flowed through to the bottom line in the prior year clearly didn't come into this year. And so therefore, the reduction in underlying operating profit out of the PBT was more than offset. A pleasing number is the net cash position. So at the full year, we reported a good improvement at 18 million net cash versus 15 million at the half year in the prior year. We were able to improve that further, increasing by 1 million to 19 million for the half. And again, in a couple of slides, we'll be able to show you the key constituent parts of that change. And the final box is ETEL D2C revenue. So ETEL obviously being the sales we make to pure pay e-tailers rather than bricks and mortar retailers. And then also direct to consumer D2C, what we sell through our own .com websites. So pleasingly, that improved from 0.4 million sales in the prior year to 0.9, 125% increase. And in particular, D2C, albeit from quite a small base, improved fourfold by 400%. So this is a graphic to bridge the change from the prior year half revenue to this year. So it starts on the left with 10.6. We make an adjustment to get down to 10 million. This is based on previously reported a 28-week rather than a 26-week period. It's linked to it being a manufacturing business rather than a pure brand business that we are today. So we've changed our reporting periods so we are consistent with most other people being two 26-week periods. But obviously, to compare like for like, what we did was back out the two additional weeks in the prior year. So that change is a 0.6 million change from 10.6 to 10. So our real comparative starting point is 10 million. In terms of the downsides or the drags versus the prior year, there was a one-off income that was signed relating to the coexistence agreement with another FMCG company relating to the Alive brand. That was a one-off non-recurring revenue that was booked in the prior year that didn't occur in this period. The other one was the impact of COVID. So Christmas gift, the retailers where we sell our Christmas gift range into, clearly at the point that they were making those decisions, COVID had more than impacted consumer demand. And therefore, they had quite a conservative view on the Christmas gift range that they wanted to put in store. So correspondingly, our range was reduced during that period. So that had a 0.6 million effect. Albeit we did actually see, so this relates to the Christmas just gone, very good sellout rates of our gifts during that period. So they probably could have done more, but clearly they didn't know that at the time the deals were struck. But it did sell through well, and hopefully that bodes well going forward for the agreements that will come for this Christmas 2021. The other area was, in particular, the high street suffered through the lockdowns and the footfall in those areas. So where we sell much of our range into those retailers, that was impacted, and that had a 0.8 million detrimental effect. But as I alluded to in the previous slide, that was partially offset through increase in our e-tail, pure play, and also our direct consumer channels, where consumer buying habits obviously shifted from in-store to online. We were able to partially offset that with those increases. And we do see this clearly as a very big opportunity for the group going forward, not only on extending our range in e-tail with e-tailers, but also the D2C marketplace, so we can fully capitalize in this changing consumer habit. So that resulted in a 9 million net sales delivered for the period. From a cash perspective, so gross cash at the end of the financial year in June, we were 21.2 million. Net cash, so that's net of any loans or debt, we were 18 million. So clearly, having cash on the balance sheet, what we decided to do to avoid finance costs that weren't necessary, we elected to repay our loans and invoice discounting lines early. So that was a 3.2 million total repayment, which took us down to 18 million net cash where we ended the prior year. In terms of expenditures then from cash, we continue to pay into our defined benefit pension scheme according to the deficit repayments that are agreed with the trustee. The new set of repayments should be agreed for the next 3 years. Within the next 3 months, we have to conclude with the trustee, but that was just following the prescribed repayments we had to do. The other area was good investment in our IT systems, which we'll talk about shortly as part of our operational efficiency plan. And also with a view to international expansion, ensuring that we have the right trademark registrations for our brands, that we protect our IP in the territories in which we want to expand. On the upside then, 0.8 million, the underlying operating profit we discussed before, pleasingly that flowed through into cash. So that was a great conversion rate on that. On top of that, we were able to sharpen our working capital and get a 0.2 million net inflow. Above all, what was good was the reduction in inventory further from the year end. So there was a 1.5 million reduction in inventory. And also there was a 0.4 million repayment of tax paid on account in the previous year, taking us to a 19 million net cash position at the half.
So in September, we launched our Project 50, which is our transformational campaign to take the business from a 16 million net sales to 50 million within 5 years. And as part of that strategic overhaul, we outlined four key pillars. So one was operational efficiency. The second was optimizing our portfolio. Third was channel development. And fourth was environmental and social responsibility. So Tom's going to take you through an update on the efficiency slide. Pillar rather, and I'll do the other three.
Yes, so from an operational efficiency perspective, one of the key parts of our strategy from a product consumer perspective is to be data-led. So what the business has done is invested in electronic point of sale data. So what we sell of our brands, or what our retailers sell of our brands in store, and also IRI data, which actually looks at the same piece, but as the market as a whole, so we can see competitors and category performance. So we bought that data, but also found a good way to visualize that data within dashboards in the business. So we're consuming that through a good business intelligence platform, making that available and transparent to the commercial team and to the product development team to really understand the performance of our brands and how that relates to both our customers and our consumers. From an operational point of view, what's very clear is that our overall objective to be a Project 50, so 50 million business, we need to keep on investing in having a very efficient operating model, which will not only ensure that the organic growth that we're aiming to deliver drops down into earnings and also cash, but also any M&A targets that we find that we can efficiently slot them into our business as part of our overall trajectory. So with that in mind, from our transactional accounting system that was put in the prior year, we've done some great work in terms of scoping, implementing, and soon to go live a demand planning and forecasting system to make sure we have lean and mean working capital, but also we have great product availability to support the growth that we are going for, so we have the right product available at the right time. On top of that, having good business intelligence to be able to slice and dice our data to understand our own internal performance and how we're doing against our well-set internal KPIs. And on top of that, a good improvement management portal so we can make good decisions and be entrepreneurial, but make them quickly. And that's been earmarked for implementation in H2 as well. An example of one of the benefits of this is reducing our inventory balance, as I alluded to in the previous slide, by 1.5 million. That's actually been before the sort of full embedding of the demand planning system. So already the right mindset is in the business. And we're hoping that this IT infrastructure will further push that.
Thank you. So the second pillar is optimizing our portfolio. So first, we're looking at all non-performing brands, and then putting in place relaunch strategies. So in most cases, new designs. Sometimes it's also about changing the proposition. But linked to that is reviewing the sort of productivity of individual SKUs, and in many ways, rationalizing it so we do fewer, bigger, better. And that's music to most bricks and mortar retailers, because they obviously there's a finite amount of space. So if we're investing in terms of brand building exercises or initiatives, and at the same time having fewer SKUs, then overall that improves productivity. So we're well underway. So as I mentioned earlier, 5 brands will be relaunched in the next 6 months. Also, we're supporting Superfacialist with our first ever national advertising campaign, and that's transformative. And then also we've put in place a 360 PR and comms program to support those relaunches as well as any NPD. So in the next 6 months, there's NPD for Superfacialist. Last sort of H1, we launched the solution. So we continue to do that. We'll treat them as brands rather than as product-led retail exclusives. Third pillar is channel development. So there's 2 strands to this. One is that we need to become more of an omni-channel manufacturer. So that's like having presence not only on the high street, but also within e-com as well as D2C. And we're underway. And a number of brands, we've seen some distribution gains. But the other bit really is about the creation of the D2C. So it's the most, probably the most important bit that we need to do within Project 50 is to launch our own marketplace. So hence, we're delighted that we've struck a 5-year agreement. So we haven't quite signed the T's and C's, hence we can't tell you, but it will be imminent. And that will be a game changer. So there's a slide coming up later, which I'll give you some more detail. And the fourth and as important pillar is all about our environmental and societal responsibility. So not only are we looking to reduce the use of plastic and to encourage reuse, recyclability, but we also look at the sustainability of the ingredients and also have initiatives where we give back to local communities, such as beauty banks and also some charities. So Superfacialist, I mean, this is the fastest growing brand within the portfolio. So gross sales in H1 is up 50%. And we believe this is really because it's sort of captured the zeitgeist of consumers not being able to go and have a facial. So they've been able to do it at home. It's a broad range. Each of the sub-ranges feature on a specific benefit. So whether it's retinol, whether it's vitamin C. But a bit like if you have a facial, you can use them. They're very sympathetic to one another. And on the back of these sales growth, we've secured new listings in Waitrose and Morrisons in H1. And there's more distribution gains to be announced in H2. So the campaign, which we believe is can be transformational, is a mix of broadcast, digital and social. It'll have a strong reach and frequency. It launches in 10th of May and it runs through to March 22. So there are 3 separate bursts. There's 2 months, May, June, September, October, and then February, March. So the reason why we're very confident that we'll be able to transform this business, so we've had great response from our customers. So they're looking to support the advertising with secondary location, but also we've had good feedback from in-house consumer research. So D2C, as I mentioned, this is a major change for our business. So in many ways, we're doing a catch-up because most branded businesses have an established D2C footprint. We didn't. And although we've shown great growth in H1, it is from a very small base. So we spent the last few months looking at various options, and we narrowed it down to 2 global providers, and we went through a 3-month due diligence exercise. We've made the decision, so the partner we'll be working with has the ability to, for international rollout, they've got a proven platform, it works extremely well, and their operational efficiencies are very attractive. So whether that's from the warehouse, the pick and pack, the overall process, we can plug in and play. So they're extremely attractive. What we're doing over the next 6 months is sort of working with them in the creation of the marketplace and what it's going to be called, the reason why it's going to exist. And that will then lead to the design process. It will lead to the navigation, the skin. You've got to set up all the back office as well. But all that's in play. So week by week, we continue to make good inroads on that. And the aspiration is within our Project 50 is for the D2C to be 10 million in 5 years, excluding M&A. And the general shape of that business, it will be invest in years 1 and 2 and then start to see strong returns in years 3 to 5. So there are 3 key areas in D2C. So one is brand awareness. Now, we're fortunate that we already have brand awareness. So if someone's going to Superfacialist, they'll still end up in the new marketplace. But then you start to invest in terms of traffic, and traffic can come from PPC, It could come from optimizing from a search engine perspective. It could be from affiliate programs. It could be investment in influencers or Instagram and Facebook. All that drives the traffic. And then it's just important that you can convert the traffic into sales. And that's by having great value, great product, potential bundles, etc. So you know, this is a really exciting but important strategic initiative for us. So we're very pleased that we're making good inroads. M&A, so in terms of priorities, there's a lot going on. So I probably would say that you know the relaunch of our existing portfolio and then supporting that with marketing activity is number one. Number two will be the Superfacialist campaign, because that in many ways is going to be a transformation to how that brand's positioned within the market. And the third is the D2C. The fourth is M&A, and although I say four, it's not that we can't switch off from M&A. So we constantly evaluate multiple opportunities. Nothing has been right at the moment, either because of the strategic fit or the multiple expectations. But Tom and I continue to evaluate all opportunities. And it is part of the Project 50 strategy that we'll be bringing in business that will be margin accretive in order to get to that 50 million net sales. So it's difficult to give you a time frame, because you may aspire to buy a brand, but if the price isn't right or the timing's not right, you can't do anything about it. So, you know, but we have to constantly evaluate all opportunities. And that will probably won't come in this fiscal, but I hope that we'll be able to announce something for the next fiscal. So the outlook for the remainder of this year, the microeconomic environment is uncertain, although Boris has given us quite a clear roadmap. It probably means that we're not going to get back to normal trading until June. Which will be the end of our financial. So it was important for us to basically use this year as a consolidation and putting in place those strategic building blocks so we can have a really transformative and focus on growth next year. And how we're going to do that is landing the five relaunches, putting in play the transformational advertising campaign, look to drive and grow distribution, both domestic initially, but also then internationally. And then the launch and creation of our own marketplace. It's also important to stress that the investment required for those will come out of our operating cash flow. And then finally, we'll continue to look at M&A opportunities that will enable us to deliver Project 50. Timing-wise, it won't be this fiscal, hopefully something into next year. So that really is the outlook. It may be at this point we do open it up to questions.
And we have a question from David Floyd.
Movements in the pension fund deficit can sometimes be bigger than your great assets on the profit front. Is quite a lot of this due to people who worked for the demerged business? Or do you have a lot of current employees who are members such that you need to keep it going rather than trying to demerge the asset and liability to keep current employees happy?
So this is a closed scheme. So this relates to the manufacturing business that was sold. I mean, the most sensitive aspect to this scheme, so no further member accruals are going in. It's a closed scheme. Obviously, I think there are some who are already drawing their pensions as part of the scheme, and there are what they call deferred members, so not yet at a retirement age to be able to draw on those benefits. The biggest swing on that scheme when it's revalued is the discount rate. And generally, that discount rate refers to government bonds, so gilts, plus some kind of margin within that. And the unfortunate thing is obviously, maybe not in the last month, but certainly in the last period for revaluation, that hasn't gone for us. So when the discount rate narrows, it increases the liability and therefore the net liability. So the massive swing that obviously happened in the accounts was that it increased to 13 million, and it currently is there under IAS 19 for this half year. But what I would say is that as a company, we clearly view this as a long-term liability. So whilst the accounting or the actuarial, there can be swings within that, in real terms, it's a closed scheme. And what we do is we work very well with the trustee of the scheme. to ensure that we set deficit repayments that are fair to all stakeholders. So we need to be fair to the scheme, but also to shareholders. We have a very good relationship with the trustee, and they very much understand the tenets of our Project 50 strategy. And they are bought into the fact that it's a win-win for all stakeholders if we scale and achieve Project 50 and beyond and improve earnings. So we're all aligned. Unfortunately, it is a bit of an accounting and actuarial exercise, but it doesn't relate to any existing employees. It's a closed scheme.
Thank you.
What sort of net margin are you targeting as a part of Project 50?
I think there are a number of elements to that. Certainly in terms of the period, we're 0.4 million. If we look at it from a PBT basis, everyone looks at it at a different level, but if we're 0.4 million on a PBT basis, based on 9 million, then we're, 3%, something like that. We kind of see it in stages, but essentially, it's definitely our aim to clearly get into double digits and beyond. And I think the building blocks we're putting in place, particularly with D2C, have a direct consumer with the marketplace, have the ability to really supercharge that for the group. There'll be some initial investment upfront, as we know, but ultimately within that, if we can get the model right and be very efficient ultimately with our spend and reach that maturity and have a good subscriber base, then that should be able to drag it well into the double digits. And also the building blocks we're putting in place in terms of having an efficient operating model as well will hopefully then mean that being an asset light, outsourced business fully focused on its brands, the organic growth, the invest in the brands, the brand relaunches, the above the line and the D2C, and also then the M&A that complements the strategy. You put all those in, and then in future years, really the earnings should drop through to the bottom line. So we see it in stages. It should be double digits, and then as we reach maturity, increase from there.
Thank you. And the next question is, now a bad time to invest in beauty products? Is this really a growing sector, or is it actually likely to be in structural decline as a result of increasing working from home a few days a week?
Good question. I think it depends on the category. People still need to wash, they still need to an element of indulgence at home. So most of our categories, we expect to see growth, in particular facial skincare. So that hasn't been affected at all by the lockdown across the world, actually. But there may be, if there are less instances in terms of going out and doing your hair or wearing makeup or even fragrance, potentially. We don't really participate in many of those categories with the exception of fish styling. However, I actually think there will be an uptick in terms of once we've got through lockdown, people wanting to go out to celebrate, to party, and that will need, people want to make themselves look as good and smell as good as possible. So I actually think it's a great time to be investing in the beauty industry.
If I could just to build on that, is that it's a very big market and we currently take a very small share. So what we're looking to do, obviously, is take a bit of a share of that overall market or the pie. The projections are that it as an overall market, and Quentin is quite right, there's different aspects within that, but overall it is projected to grow. But we're looking to over-index on that growth, and we believe that we got the brands to capitalise on that.
Many thanks for talking to us today. Have any of the top team got experience of successful M&A, and are there key learnings from previous experiences which you'll bring forward with Brand Architects?
I can answer first of all. So yes, in my background, certainly. First of all, on the advisory side on leveraged finance, but also recently with Technetics, we did a couple of bolt-on acquisitions. Clearly, can't talk too much in detail with it, but I think the key point, and I think we've got an experienced board, but also we very much know our brands. It's all about finding assets that are complementary to our strategy. That's the key one, and we will not compromise on that. So it's products that fit in with our portfolio, but if it brings people as well, it needs to be fits in with our culture and, you know, the key tenets of our strategy. For me, just from a finance operational point of view, it then comes down to the execution, having a very good 100-day plan, but also making sure that there's a seamless integration. I think that this year is very much one of preparation. We are preparing our operating model, so our house is in order, so that when we bring assets in and they are the right fit, they will slot in very well and they will be accretive from a margin point of view, but complementary to the wider portfolio. So I think it's very much one of planning, having your own house in order, and also reviewing in depth the assets that you bring on and making sure they're the right fit. We won't do any deals that are not good from that point of view and also at the right price.
Yeah, reiterates a lot of what Tom just said. So, I mean, I had 10 years as part of initially Lornamede, which is a family private equity run business, which was, I was basically recruited to sell the Yardley brand to Wipro, and Wipro was highly acquisitive. So I got involved with quite a lot of M&A work, more from a sort of advisory capacity. But I'd reiterate Tom's point is that whatever we look to acquire, there needs to be that sort of strategic fit. Ideally, is it going to be enhanced in terms of the, you know, channels that we're not participating in? So could it enhance that? But also, what could we do? We'd only be paying top multiples if we can't add to it. So whether that means by extending into other categories or extending to other markets, that's important. But also, if something has an IP, so giving a real point of difference and potentially buying into that early, then that will also be, it's a useful asset. I think one of the key learnings is to understand consumption and shopping behavior. So going back to the previous question, if there was a particular category which was in decline and consumers were no longer using that category, then even though it may be a good price, that wouldn't be something we'd want to buy. So understanding consumer behavior, but also future consumer behavior, is a key consideration for any M&A.
Thank you. And that's the end of questions. Quentin, do you have any closing remarks?
Thank you very much for dialing in. I hope we've been able to give you an insight into Project 50 and the transformative journey that we're on. It is only 6 months into this process, but we're very confident about the course of events, and we're very pleased with some of the results to date, in particular the advertising campaign we're going to put behind Superfacialist, the journey we are in terms of delivering and creating a marketplace, but also the relaunch of our brand. So it has been a difficult 6 months, but in many ways it's a very exciting 6 months. And I think I can say on behalf of both of us, we are very excited about the journey and where we're going to go with it. So thank you very much for dialing in. Hopefully we'll give you a good insight into brand architects.
PI World videos and podcasts are for general information and interest. They do not constitute any kind of recommendation or inducement to buy shares of any company. PI World is not offering any kind of financial advice, and nothing in our material should be taken as such.